Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, April the 23rd. The tragedy at Virginia Tech affected the lives of many and left many people wondering why. But perhaps officials may be able to find out an answer. NBC Nightly News anchor Brian Williams.
Good evening. We now know what the Virginia Tech gunman was doing during that two-hour period between shootings on campus. He was compiling before going to the post office and mailing via overnight mail what can only be described as a multimedia manifesto containing video, still pictures, and a lengthy document to NBC headquarters, this very building here in New York.
NBC made a copy of the materials and gave the originals to federal officials. NBC decided to show portions of the video, pictures, and text as a part of a report, many reports, and then several other news outlets throughout the country also rebroadcast the material. But victims, families, officials, and others say that the media went overboard showing this multimedia manifesto, and some say it shouldn't have been broadcast at all. Did it hurt and not inform? What was the media's responsibility in this case and when it has sensitive materials like this? We will talk about that decision to air the shooter's manifesto and also talk about your overall impressions of the media coverage of the Virginia Tech shootings so far. The school is getting weary. Classes resume today, as we heard in NPR News, and campus officials are closing off the classrooms to cameras and asking journalists to back off. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Our toll-free number for you to join in the conversation in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is James Hoyt, Professor Emeritus of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. He worked at NBC News in the 70s and was a consultant for NBC News and many other local television stations in the 80s and 90s. Professor Hoyt, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Joy.
So did NBC make the right decision in airing portions of this multimedia manifesto?
You know, I've given it a lot of thought, and I've looked at their rationale, and I've read a lot of the criticisms. I tend to think it was a good call that they made, and I would base it on the following. Once the incident had occurred at Virginia Tech, and once we kind of knew the facts of what had happened, the attention of the public, and I think the rightly also the attention of the media, raises the questions of, okay, how did it happen? Mm-hmm. Could this happen again? What was going on in this person's mind? What caused it? And NBC ended up, through no work of its own, being the beneficiary of receiving this, I keep using the term multimedia manifesto, this packet of materials mm-hmm. from the shooter himself. And my opinion would be they did handle it in a very responsible way. They did not rush it on the air. They did not promote it or publicize it overwhelmingly. They didn't call it an exclusive. They didn't trumpet it. They carefully, first of all, they turned it over to the FBI initially, or immediately, and made copies for themselves. They worked over it all day long, virtually 8 hours of going over it, editing it, discussing it, debating it, and then aired it on NBC Nightly News that evening. And based on the number of news organizations that picked it up and used it following NBC's use, I don't think there was any serious journalist in the country who would not have used that material in some way or another. I think the question became the issue of how much, yeah. How much and how long.
Right, and all of the NBC included cut back after the first day.
That's a debatable number. They chose 18 hours. So it aired on NBC Nightly News one night. They used the material until noon the next day. Then they cut it off. And many other news organizations did the same thing. Said, okay, that's enough. People who want to see it are interested in it, have seen it. People who want that part of the story are aware of it. Now we don't need to belabor it and do it again and again. And I thought that was a responsible decision. You might argue maybe it should have been 12 hours, maybe it should have been half a day or whatever, but at least the thought process was the story is out there, we've covered it, now let's back off.
Yeah, they cut it off entirely after 18 hours.
Well, they reduced it. They left a little window for themselves to say if there was some follow-up news story that came along that was relevant to it, they would use it, but never more than 10% of their content.
Yeah.
But it was, for all practical purposes, it was pulled off the air after 18 hours, yes.
We're talking with UW-Madison Professor Emeritus of Journalism and Mass Communications, James Hoyt, about the decision by NBC and other news outlets to air the pictures and words of the Virginia Tech shooter from the package that he sent to NBC, apparently in between the shootings on the Virginia Tech campus last Monday. We wonder what you think about this decision to air this video. Was it irresponsible, or was it helpful to learn more about this killer? Was it insensitive and unnecessary? We welcome your thoughts and questions. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. And I'm also curious as to your impressions in general about the media coverage of this tragedy. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, April the 23rd. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins between 4 and 6. After 4, Ben and his guests will discuss the decision by the U.S. Supreme Court regarding late-term abortions. That's coming up after 4 this afternoon. We are talking with James Hoyt, Professor Emeritus of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison, about the decision by NBC and other news outlets to air the package of materials that the Virginia Tech shooter sent to NBC. Families and others criticize this as being hurtful and insensitive and unnecessary. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or talk at WPR.org. Before we go to the phones of Professor Hoyt, I wanted to ask you about, one aspect in particular about this package of materials that was sent to NBC. Many, many pictures of the shooter with guns, weapons pointed at the camera, and a very angry look on his face. And I think it was those pictures in particular that a lot of families and friends of the victims said were very, very hurtful, and that they were imagining that this is what their loved one or friend saw in the last minutes of their lives. Was it particularly useful to see this picture of the shooter dressed up in his garb?
You know, I think it does help our understanding of the story. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, looking at those pictures gives me an image of this person that I was curious about. I wanted to know more about him. I think there's a question of number. I think you probably could have made that point with one picture and been done with it. But again, I would return to the point that a news organization, a national news organization that has access to material like this or has been provided material like this that is absolutely at the heart of what was the major national news story of the day, almost has an obligation to use it to help the public understand what kind of a person this was, what kinds of things were going through his mind. And so I think it does benefit the public in the long run. I will raise the questions immediately after that, however, about one of how long do you do it, how much detail do you need to go into. I think one of those pictures could have captured that part of the story very well.
When a news organization is faced with a situation like this, material that I agree is newsworthy, but could cause someone pain or could possibly trigger someone else who's unstable to copycat a crime. What is done? What's discussed in that organization?
Well, you have to. There was a debate. I mean, there were 8 hours of debate that went on at NBC before it was actually aired, from the time they got it in the morning. I think that does become a factor in those discussions. I think they want to be sensitive to those types of potential concerns on the part of audience members, but that's not the prevail. I mean, that's not necessarily what determines it. What determines it is a balancing act between that and the public being in a position to wanting to know, wanting to understand, wanting to get some sort of closure on what kind of a person this was. So I think they want to do it in as complete but also as tasteful a way, but also make the point clearly that we have some understanding now of what this person was all about.
We'll go to the phones. Jim and Shono is with us. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
I viewed the television program, and I could see nothing wrong with it. And as a former law enforcement officer, I believe that many people wanted to know what kind of a person this was and why would he do something like this. They didn't go out and solicit the information that was given to them. They turned it immediately over to the FBI. And I think they made careful consideration of what they should show and how much they should show. I don't think they did it, and I think they should have showed it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much. You know what? I'm interested. I did see a law enforcement officer, I'm not sure exactly who it was, some top official in this investigation, though, making a comment at a news conference that he was disappointed with NBC's decision. Did you hear that too, Professor Hoyt?
I heard a couple comments of that type or read them, yes. And I think we need to understand with a story as high profile as this was, NBC was in a position that they were going to get criticism regardless of what they did. And if they would have decided to hold it back and to not show it to the public, there would have been an overwhelming amount of criticism that they were restricting public knowledge of this this part of the story. So I think that's all healthy. And I think that's a part of the balancing act that goes into making an informed decision of this type, but it's not necessarily the one that carries the day in the end.
Yeah, and certainly there was a tremendous public interest in why and who was this person and why did he do this.
And they had a big chunk of the answer there, or a part that was of great interest to the public at the time, I would contend.
And that being that he was rambling on about his anger in rich people and this, I mean, we learned that he was mentally ill.
Yeah. And yeah. One of the comments I found interesting was the president of NBC News, after reviewing all of the material, said that the overwhelming majority, he used the term, was filled with threats and gibberish. And we didn't see all of that. I mean, we saw very carefully selected excerpts from it that I think gave us a feeling and an understanding of kind of what this person was like.
Yeah, and they bleeped out profanity, didn't use. Apparently there were entire segments that were just laced with a profanity,
yeah,
every other word, and they didn't use that.
And the vast, vast majority of it was not used.
Yeah. Victoria in Spring Green, hello, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I've never done this before, but this whole issue is just to my heart, and if I break out in tears, forgive me.
Well, thank you for calling.
In 1991, on Father's Day, my husband was killed in a plane crash in Stoughton as a private pilot.
I'm sorry.
He was a state trooper. He flew for the state patrol, and his friends saw him die. State troopers came to my front door and told to me at the age of 32 with a 9 and 11-year-old that my husband had died in a plane crash. That was played over and over and over and over over the course of 4 days. My kids couldn't go anywhere without hearing it or seeing it. His parents couldn't go anywhere without it being on the news. Every 20 minutes, the first 2 days, he was dead. Because he was a state trooper and because he had flown for the state, It was over and over and over and over. And they wondered what kind of pilot he was. Was he a competent pilot? Before all of the investigation from the FAA was even through, which took weeks to do, and the plane was dug up and they found parts and figured out what happened, his competency as a pilot was questioned in the news over and over. And I just, my heart goes out to the parents, to the families of these victims, because not only can they not even begin the grief process, the anger process, they don't have time to just sit like a zombie and not hear anything. There is just bombardment. So I think when newscasters decide to do this, because it does sell news and it does pique the public interest, they do need to look at who are we affecting as individuals over and over. My 11-year-old son spent that entire summer coming into my bedroom every night to ask me, are you still breathing?
Mm. Victoria, I'm so sorry for your loss. And Professor Hoyt, your reaction?
I really appreciate her comments, and I understand fully the position that she, the situation that she went through.
I mean, when
it raises
there,
one
when
of my...
When you stand there, Professor, and you talk to a reporter who's filming a crash site, and you ask them with decency and with the values that I have in my heart, to please not photograph the crash scene, to please not interview other pilots until the whole investigation is over, and they simply tell you it's news and the public's going to want to know about it, and they have a right to do it. I had no legal recourse at that point. I had no right to say no.
You didn't want Victoria, anyone to see the crash site.
I didn't want my children, his parents. If they wanted to see it, the farm that he was killed in, they were gracious. They let me come every Sunday for almost 6 months to just stand there and reflect and celebrate his life. And I think that people need to be respected when they say, please, stop doing this.
Yeah.
Give them some grace.
Her example raises a criticism that I have had of media for a long time, and that is they are not very good at knowing when to stop, when to pull the plug on a story. They can get caught up in a story, and it takes on a life of its own. I remember going way back to the O.J. Simpson story, when, and I can remember I predicted once the networks followed the so-called slow-speed chase of the white Bronco, that from that point on, the networks were hooked. They were caught in the story, and they were going to follow it regardless. But that they just... There's not a very good mechanism for making a decision on when enough is enough. And I've raised that many times, and I will continue to raise it, and I think it goes to the heart in many ways of what she's talking about, is that you can tell the story, but you can also over-tell the story.
Yeah. And in this particular case, to relate it back to the Virginia Tech, tell the story of who this shooter was in this, but then back off.
And I think it was an appropriate decision to back off at the time they did. However, I think need to also point out that that decision was made following a lot of criticism.
Right.
It came from families. Whether they would have made it on their own absent that criticism is a question we'll never know the answer to.
We're going to check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will continue talking about whether the media were responsible in the coverage of the Virginia Tech shootings. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 6:36 on this Monday, April the 23rd. In the aftermath of the Virginia Tech tragedy, NBC received a package sent to it by the shooter containing a video, photos, and written text. Here's NBC's Brian Williams.
When the package arrived on the desk of our news division president today, the first thing we did was call federal authorities. Tonight, they have the original envelope. This one we've been showing you is a color copy. We have been poring over a copy of the contents we made. It has taken hours, and we are still going through it. We are sensitive to how all of this will be seen by those affected, and we know we are, in effect, airing the words of a murderer here tonight.
NBC aired those words and those images and released The Material and other news outlets followed suit. We are looking at whether these news outlets made the right choice or an insensitive one. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or talk at WPR.org. We welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest, and also your impressions of the media coverage of the Virginia Tech shootings in general. The school is closing off classrooms to cameras today. Classes resume today at Virginia Tech, also asking journalists to back off. We welcome your thoughts on how this has been covered in general, as well as this decision to air and show these images and words of the shooter. Our guest is James Hoyt, Professor Emeritus of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. He worked at NBC News in the 70s and was a consultant for NBC News and numerous local stations in the 80s and 90s. I'm wondering, Professor Hoyt, about one thing that NBC did, to get your opinion on this. Before they released the videos, the pictures, to other news organizations, it's my understanding that they imprinted a little NBC News logo on all of this material, so other stations airing these photos or video would have that little NBC logo to also air. Isn't that maybe too promotional for a situation like this?
That's a very standard practice in the news business, and I personally am not distressed by that at all. Because the news organizations, I think, very responsibly have an agreement among themselves that they will share news stories such as this. I mean, NBC did not have any obligation to make it available to other news organizations. They chose to do that, and it's been an open kind of professional understanding. If that had gone to CBS, they would have shared it with their competition. If it had gone to CNN, they would have shared it with their competition. So they do make it available so that other stations who did not receive it have an opportunity to use it on the air. But at the same time, that also notes where it came from. That I think most of what I saw of other networks that carried it did very carefully attribute it to NBC. It came from them. They were the source of it. They were the ones that provided it to them. So I think that simply goes with the territory,
yeah.
Given that there is this, I think, professional agreement and professional understanding among news organizations that when they have exclusive access to materials of that sort, they do make them available to their competition.
True, but there was no exclusive reporting work that was done by NBC to get this material.
No, that is correct, and I think they were very careful to avoid that. They never used the word exclusive and didn't promote it in that way in any way. I think they actually did it in a fairly low-key way.
Yeah, do you think NBC and others, but NBC in particular, was surprised by families boycotting interviews on the Today Show, for example?
I don't know whether they were surprised or not. I do know that that was a part of the debate that went on within NBC when they made the decisions of how to treat the material. And interestingly, one of their own very visible on-air employees, Matt Lauer, a co-anchor of the Today Show, disagreed with it and said so on the air. I don't have the direct quote in front of me, but essentially on the air said, "We have had many serious debates here within NBC on what to use and how to use it, and there are some of us, myself included, who did not agree with that decision." So I think they had, you can't have a cookie-cutter policy that applies to all these situations. You have to debate them and discuss them fully, and I think they had that, and I gave him a lot of credit for going on the air and essentially saying, "I didn't agree with this, and there were others of us at NBC, but this is the decision that we made."
So then NBC did decide to back off other news organizations too. Fox News, it seems to me, said, "We're not airing any of this at all," and was made a big point of that they weren't going to air it at all.
Well, they did at first, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did.
Yeah, but it was, I think, about the same time, and again, they keep referring to this 18-hour window, which takes us until noon the next day. That was about the time, and I think that the network policies varied a little bit regarding how much they would use, if they would use none at all, or if they would use a very carefully edited version, whatever. It wasn't all that different, by the way, from decisions that the networks made regarding the 9/11 video of the Twin Towers collapsing. There was a decision made to not continually to re-show that, but that was longer than 18 hours. That was maybe a day or two afterwards, faced with the same type of criticism from families of victims that people had seen it, people understood it, you don't need to keep re-showing that. And they backed off on that point also.
We'll go back to the phones. Tony in Wittenberg. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I have two quick points. The first one's minor, the second one's major. The minor point is that I remember, I believe it was Paula Zahn interviewing some of the students on campus immediately after it happened or as quickly as they could find them, asking leading questions. Are you upset that it took so long and these students were in shock and disbelief and they hadn't even thought about that? And they kept saying, well, no, I hadn't even thought about it, until finally they produced, it almost seemed like this question about what was going on in between. We now know what happened. My second very disturbing point is I teach at-risk students, and they have limited access to the media. Most of them don't even get to see media because they are in their rooms. And even at that, they have now seen pictures of this young man, and he has become a hero to them because they have many of the same problems, angst, and so on. Now here's this guy all over the media becoming a hero to them in these wonderful poses, and we're having a serious problem trying to make these kids understand, no, this is a vicious murderer, and the media is now in probably inadvertently, but they're making this guy out to be a huge hero in these at-risk youth.
Yeah. And why do you say that you think the students you teach think he look at him as a hero now?
Oh, they're walking around. This guy is cool. Wow, man, look at that. He's got a 9 millimeter in one hand, and you know, they're walking around making some of the same poses at school and so on. It's just the unintended circumstance or consequences of what they've done in the media is they've made this guy a hero to anybody who has the same kinds of problems. See, he can be on TV. He can be important when these kids are, we're trying to teach them, no, these are wrong decisions. This isn't the way you're supposed to be treating your fellow man. He's, you know, you look at these pictures, and some of them look like CD covers from gangster rap songs.
Yeah. Well, let me get our guest in on this. Are the media maybe unintentionally making this guy out to be a hero, Professor Hoyt?
I don't think you can blame the hero part on the media. I mean, they're covering the story, and they are helping the public to understand this person. And if there are people who perceive that or, you know, put that into the context of being a hero, I think that's unfortunate. But I think it is part of, if you will, kind of the price we pay for having a media that reports on issues like this. I think that in many ways it might even be worse to not have reported this part of the story, and they have people imagining and fantasizing and trying to create what they think it might be like. I agree that it's unfortunate. I also agree that it is unintended, but I think it is something that simply goes with the territory in covering a major story such as this. We want to know, we need to know, and if all we can about how did this happen, what went on in this person's mind, what kind of a person was this. And in so doing, if some people in the audience conclude that that's something that they think is a positive, that's unfortunate. But I think the vast majority of the people look on that as a part of their understanding of how or why this very disturbed individual might have acted the way he did.
Our guest, James Hoyt, a professor emeritus of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison, talking with us about whether or not NBC went too far in airing the Virginia Tech shooter's video and pictures and words in his text, and other news outlets as well. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 12 minutes before 7 o'clock. Coming up after 7, it's our State Capitol Report. We'll talk about what's making news under the State Capitol Dome and what's on tap this week in the state legislature during our State Capitol Report coming up after 7 o'clock. We're talking with James Hoyt, Professor Emeritus of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison, about the coverage, media coverage of the Virginia Tech tragedy last week. And in particular, we've been focusing in on this decision made by NBC News and other news outlets to air the package of material that the shooter sent NBC last week, a decision that came under criticism, especially from friends and families of the victims, saying this was insensitive and hurtful, painful to see this shooter on video. And others, some concern about whether this would cause more copycat killers seeing this. Mark in Romance is our next caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking the call. I'm coming to this issue with, I don't know what's wrong here. Are you getting an echo?
There was a little echo, but please go ahead. I think
okay,
it went away.
I'm sorry. I'm coming to this issue from the perspective of being a former journalist of 18 years, and now I work as a psychotherapist, much of my work with adolescents. I think that what we're seeing is a coverage of the story in the small case S, in other words, this young man who was so ill, and we're not seeing enough coverage of the big story. How many times have Americans seen stories, coverage of these types of shooting incidents, and yet a year, 2 years later, we have another one happen? The image that particularly disturbed me was the one of him brandishing the two weapons, and he's got his cap on backwards. In one way, it's kind of an echo of, like the previous caller said, some kind of rap CD cover, but then he's also projecting that image forward. And I do think that the media has a much larger responsibility to filter these kinds of images out, because they definitely are having reverberations in our society. And my fear is in another week, 2 weeks, they're not going to be covering the issue of the lack of mental health coverage for young people like this, or the issue of confidentiality of mental health records from families and so on.
Professor Hoyt?
I think that's a very good point, and it highlights another long-standing criticism of mine, and it is that it is, if you look at it this way from looking at the media perspective, it's so much easier to cover an event than to cover an issue. I mean, to cover an event, to cover a shooting, to cover whatever the event may be, than to develop all of the perspectives on the issue that's related to the event. And I think that goes right to the heart of what the caller is saying, that they can do a thorough and exhaustive and maybe even excessive job of covering an incident like this, but it raises a much broader issue, and that is these types of people, how they react, the pressures on them, what is the genesis of many of these types of stories in our society. And I agree, a couple weeks from now we're probably going to lose that, and it's not going to be present, and I would like to challenge some of my brethren in the media to take on some of those issues. They're much more difficult. They take a lot of time to develop, and you're never certain when you get done if you're actually going to have a wonderful story in the end. When you cover an incident, you know you've got the story.
Certainly, I have seen and heard some coverage along those lines already. But the thought is that the interest in this story will go away.
Yeah, and the story. I'm not saying the stories aren't there, but they're kind of they come and go.
Right.
They're
right.
not consistent.
Yeah. There was some criticism of various media outlets, and it's so hard to just, you know, label the media, it's so broad, but mm-hmm. Talking about the gun law debate right away on Monday and Tuesday, and some saying that was just uncalled for, irresponsible, trying to create a controversy before the investigation even began. Was there anything irresponsible about doing that?
I would throw that in a category of lazy journalism. Mm-hmm. You can pull that one out anytime. Anytime mm-hmm. you have any story that involves a gun,
yeah.
you can pull out the gun control debate and throw it into that story. It doesn't take much work to bring that about.
Yeah.
I find that to be a valid criticism, and as I said, I put it in the category of lazy journalism. It's easy to do that. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the story at all, but it kind of prolongs it in a almost meaningless way.
Yeah. Robert in Lowell is with us now. Hi, Robert.
Hey, good morning. With this story, it wiped Anna Nicole Smith right off the... Are you getting a bad echo?
I'm sorry. I did not hear an echo with you, Robert, but I hope you can just go ahead.
Okay. This wiped the Anna Nicole Smith thing right off the news, which I guess is a good thing, but it's sad that these people died. But the story is that a apparently mentally disturbed individual killed 32 people in a university. After that, everything else is a story being created by journalists. They get out their file cabinet, and they pull out names of so-called expert psychologists who come on the news and tell us all about it, what this guy was thinking when they didn't even know him. Why don't reporters, NBC would be fine if they just report what happened and what they know, not trying to put their spin on it and create more and more news out of the subject. When this happens in foreign countries, and it does happen in other countries, it's on the news and then it's gone. Here, we're going to ride this dog until the next big Anna Nicole Smith or something else comes along. You know, and that is the journalist's fault. I mean, it's ridiculous right now. You can't even turn on a radio station or a television without hearing somebody's opinion of what they think about this individual or what caused him to do it. And you are setting up the next one right now because there are mentally ill people out there. We're going to have a discussion. Let's have a discussion about why, when we report to the police about somebody in our community or our neighborhood who is acting weird or strange, they'll say, well, there's nothing we can do about it until they commit a crime, because there isn't in our society today. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Robert, before you go.
Yes.
We'll bring on a mental health expert to talk about those types of issues. Is that part of the criticism you have of the media, that I'm going to bring on a mental health expert to talk about these issues you just brought up?
You're going to bring on somebody who is pretending to be an expert, not an expert. Most experts are only right once in their life. Now, it's one thing to discuss mental illness, but when you start sitting there trying to tell us what this guy was thinking or what he did, he's dead. These people never. Now, if you could get somebody who maybe sat through several weeks or days of sessions with this guy, that'd be another story. But you don't know what was going through his head or his mind, and you will never know.
Yeah. Professor Hoyt?
I guess I have two comments on it. One goes back to an observation that I made earlier that agrees with the caller, in that there are times and stories such as this that the media do not know when to stop. That they ride it, and they ride it way too long, well beyond the time that it is a legitimate story. At the same time, I would also argue on the other side that it is a part of the responsibility and the obligation of the media to try to place some context around a story, mm-hmm. to not just report the fact of the story, but also to try to put some context around it. And so I'm not going to fault them for seeking out experts who have dealt with issues such as this or have dealt with individuals such as this to try to help the public understanding of the story. And I'm not going to talk about any individual
right.
one. I don't have a specific example. But that I think that that is a valid part of the responsibility of the media to try to place some context around the story.
Yeah, one more call. Megan in Maguanago. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Just echoing the previous sentiments, I don't understand why they couldn't have aired less flattering footage. I mean, we saw Britney Spears beating up paparazzi with an umbrella for like 2 weeks. So,
more embarrassing or less flattering pictures of the shooter, Professor White?
I don't know if they had any.
Yeah, right.
I don't know what they, the universe of images they had to select from. So I can't really answer that in a vacuum.
Yeah, we have less than a minute to go. Just any concluding thoughts on? Do you think where the coverage of this is going to go?
I think one of the positives, if you will, that can grow out of this is that not only NBC but other news organizations do, and I'm very aware of this, use this as an opportunity to discuss, to evaluate, mm-hmm. to play games of what if something like this happens or if a variation of this happens, how would we handle it most responsibly? I think that the kind of debate we're engaging in right now, after the fact on a story like this, informs and can potentially improve the media response in the stories in the future.
Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
James Hoyt, Professor Emeritus of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.